they the smartest show in the Bay Area?
You guys are an intellectual feast for the smart sports fan in the Bay Area.
Wow.
You're pretty much the smartest guy on the radio.
I agree.
Good Lord, how big is your ego?
Are they the funniest show in the Bay Area?
Give it a laugh. Come on. You're a funny guy. Come on. Give me a laugh.
You are funny, dude.
Hit that ass again.
Are they the coolest show in the Bay Area?
Hey, no white boys. They cool.
That's what people are saying.
You guys are phenomenal.
This is one of the most perfect ways that I could end my day, getting the chance to talk to Mr. Mark and Dan, you know?
We'll let you be the judge.
Oh.
All I know is it's a couple of Bay Area boys talking sports.
I know nothing.
Thanks.
It's Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go. Willard and Dibs, glad you're with us. And 888-957-9570 is the number. And we're working on plenty, but right now we've got you.
Yep.
We've got me.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got all the people listening. So let's ride, because that's really all we need. Let's have some fun. I hate using this word. It gets overused in sports media by hot take blowhards who love to say that when you're not awesome in sports, it's embarrassing. I remember right before I left, we had that conversation because the Dodgers were in town and there were hot take blowhards around town actually accusing the Giants fans of being embarrassing.
Because Dodger fans decided to buy tickets and show up in blue uniforms?
Right, because apparently Giants fans are in charge of StubHub. Like, do you all have the password to StubHub? Go in there and make sure Dodger fans aren't allowed to buy tickets. That's stupid when we say stuff like that. It comes from emotion. And I get it, but I think that that's stupid. Sports is very rarely embarrassing. Sports is hard. It's really, really hard. There are things that are embarrassing.
Sure.
But I don't know if it usually comes in the X's and O's. For instance, the A's behavior over the last handful of years. That's embarrassing.
From the ownership, yes.
Yes,
no
I think
doubt.
Fisher and Dave Cavill, you should be embarrassed.
Well, he's gone now,
right.
Dave Cavill.
I know, but just behavior through the
For
years.
Sure.
That's embarrassing. But here's something that hit me today, and we touched on it a second ago, that I do wonder if it embarrasses the Giants. When you keep finishing 500 and you keep finishing in eighth place in the league or third or fourth place in your division, when you keep doing that and you're one of the teams that spend, that's kind of embarrassing because it literally in a way means you came in last place. And there's a bigger issue here with the way baseball runs itself that we should talk about.
Oh, we'll get into it.
But the Giants are really only beating teams that largely aren't trying. And there are always set-asides. I know that the Tigers for the last year or two have been really good, and they don't, at this moment, spend. And we'll see if they do when their young players are all due for extensions and things like that. There's always set-asides. But largely in baseball, when you spend, you win. The top six payrolls, basically last year, they all went to the playoffs. And this year, let me just read off the, I'll give you, here are the top nine payrolls in baseball this year.
Okay.
Let's see if you can find one team that'll stand out. This is this year's payroll at the moment.
All right, give it to me.
Mets are number one.
They are in first in their division.
Phillies are number two.
They're a game and a half back of the Mets.
The Dodgers are number three.
I think they're pretty good, Mark. I'd have to Google it.
The Blue Jays are number four.
Toronto's in first in the East by 5.5.
The Rangers are number five.
The Rangers are a team that is on the bubble, but they're only four out in the division.
Okay, Yankees are number six.
Yeah, they're right there.
The Giants are number seven.
They are now four back of the Padres, and they're hearing footsteps from the Diamondbacks. They're behind the Cincinnati Reds. Where are the Reds in the payroll? You'll get to it.
Yeah, well,
you may have
we're
going
to have to talk for a
times.
While. Yeah, so the Padres are eight, and the Cubs are number nine.
Cubs a game back, and they are eight games better than the Giants.
The Rangers, you're right. Their playoff odds, their bubble. Right now, they're almost 50-50 to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
So,
second-half team.
We'll make it. But anyway, who stands out in those top nine? Right now, the worst of the top nine are the San Francisco Giants. normally when you spend, you go to the playoffs, and the Giants are spending, and they're still not able to separate themselves from the 500 mark. And I'm not, like, embarrassed by that, but I wonder if they are.
Well, not yet, but I do think that if you get to the end of this year, and, you know, you and I did the bit, I think before you left, I did their last 4 years winning percentage from 3 years and then up to the moment in this year, and I did it this morning again, and they are six games below 500.
Incredible.
Over the last, you know, three and more than a half years. They are absolutely dead, almost 500 mediocre, and that's unacceptable when you spend like they've spent. And if you look at their top seven paid players, these are players that you would expect would be better than what they've been. And Willie Adames is the one where keep Willie's name out your mouth. Matt Steinmetz, I know you're not feeling great and you're out again today, but if you look at Willie over the last almost 2 months, he's been better than you would have thought he would be, but Devers has not been, and Jung-Hoo Lee has been a little disappointing. Robbie Ray has earned his $25 million
a year. That was a great trade.
Logan Webb has been great for so long. You're going to go ahead and like look at his last three starts and say, all right, Logan,
yeah,
that's fine. Chapman's been Chapman, but beyond that, like the other pieces of your team, I don't think it's been really a problem of your marquee payroll guys. It's been players 8 through 25 where you've been a little bit disappointed in some of them.
Reds are 21st.
By the way,
I'm doing active payroll. There's two ways to do it. It's total payroll, which is all their allocations, but that, first of all, would be an allocation sensation.
That's a buck.
And
yeah,
then secondly, that's also, I'm glad I got it right this time, but that also accounts for dollars that are being spent on people who aren't on the roster anymore and all kinds of that stuff. Thank you. I'm glad Lucas found that. But this is their active, current roster payroll, because to me that's what matters. That's who's playing right now. The Giants have the seventh most money in baseball on their active payroll, and right now they can't win a baseball game. And I wonder if that embarrasses them, because if you look at who the Giants are simply are beating, if you go to the standings, you know what you see. What was the name of that old Adam Sandler movie where he goes back to the elementary school?
Was it Billy Madison?
Billy Madison, thank you. I don't know why I couldn't think of it all. I couldn't get my mind off of Happy Gilmore.
Every one of his movies is like a fictional character's name.
Pretty much, right. So until he did that Netflix thing where he was the basketball coach, it's like the first serious role that he ever did.
Right.
It's really good, by the way. You should check it out. I can't think of the name of that either.
That wasn't Uncut Gems, but...
No, it wasn't.
He was in that too, and that was a little bit of a darker role.
He's starting to do some different stuff. But anyway, thank you. Billy Madison. That's who the Giants are. They're Billy Madison. And it's wonderful that as an adult, you're able to go to an elementary school playground, play dodgeball with the Rockies, and beat them. Good for freaking you. Who are you beating with your $200 million? You're not beating anybody. You're not beating anybody who's trying. You're not beating anybody who's on an even plane with you. To a man and to a woman, any Giants fan, you're not embarrassed that they're not finishing in front of the Dodgers. You don't expect them to do that. That's why any of you Dodger fans who live here in the Bay and you go out to the stadium, stop peacocking. You're playing a completely different game. And the game is broken, which is why Rob Manfred is in clubhouses getting in fights with stars. The system is completely bass-ackwards. And so we'll deal with that over the next decade.
Yeah.
But, like, for the Giants, from their standpoint, you're essentially one of the teams that has the cheat code. But you're not using it. You're able to outspend almost everybody else. And you're still not able to finish in front of them.
You've got seven players who are making more than $10 million this year. And if you want to just go player by player and assign them a grade for how they've been with this team... Devers is making 29.5. That's been a D, maybe a D minus. Adames making 13.1. He's quietly now a B minus, I think, trending in the right direction. His last 2 months have been spectacular.
I'd actually give it more than a B minus, just because I don't know. When someone starts, you give them a little bit of a grace. period.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Adamas is, he's been great.
Chapman's making 25.2.
Fine.
He's been great.
Yeah.
B minus, C plus. He's been better than average. Robbie Ray making 25. He's an A minus. He's an all-star. Jung Woo Lee making 16.8. Probably D plus. I mean, C minus. He's been a little bit disappointing. Logan Webb making 12. He's making
that's
12 million. Are you kidding me?
That's an A.
And then you get down to Verlander making 15. That's a D. So it's been hit and miss, but for me, it's not just been those high-paid guys. It's the next tier and then the tier below and the fact that you just can't seem to have somebody come up and get a clutch hit when you need it.
What is it? I'm watching Shasky do one of those walking from the stadium videos.
Yeah, last night. That was great.
Yeah, you know, social media. Isn't it fun? Anyway, there's Shasky, and you're like, wow, look, there's his nostrils. Like, you get all of those. You get all of us when we do one of those. And so usually we don't do those unless you're sort of inspired to do it. And that's Shasky, we got a lot of people here at our station who run with their emotions on their sleeve, and I love people like that. And he's clearly one of them. So he's leaving the yard last night, and he's actually pretty calm, but he's talking through what's going on. And it really hit me because he's kind of like, I thought they were better, and I did too, but I don't know if what we saw the first couple months, is that them? Is this them? Everyone will always go, well, it's probably somewhere in between.
Right, right.
Yeah, okay. I don't know where it's going to go next, but what is it? Like, what is happening to them? They don't get blown out very much.
No.
They lose by one run all the time. All the time they lose by one run. And so the pitching is, you can't ask them to be that dominant for that long. So I'm not mad at that. You do have certain guys who are playing better, Willie Adamas, et cetera. Like, not everybody's got horrible numbers. But what is it? What is it? It can't win a game. Why are the Giants looking like they're looking? How would you answer that?
They are not playing complimentary baseball. And we talk about complimentary football that's all the time. When the pitching, like last night, if you go into last night and you think, oh, this young phenom is going to shove, we just need two runs because he's going to be awesome. That's not the way that goes. Young pitchers making their debut, they struggle, and so that's a night where you need the offense to come through, and they almost did, but you had bases loaded and one out, and you had back-to-back, I think, a strikeout and a ground out. It's like you were unable to add on in that spot against a team where, I mean, Keller, he was begging to get lit up.
He was terrible.
Awful.
Yeah.
He was pitching like a guy who knew he was about to be traded.
But you know what? That is kind of the characteristic of the Giants, and we can talk more about it next. It's like even when things are going well, every one of those innings seems to always have an expiration date right before they get the big hit. Open the damn thing up. They can't do it.
Yep.
They just can't do it. So what is it y'all see? Why are the Giants getting these results? We'll take your calls, 888-957-9570. Larger baseball conversation, Bryce Harper, Rob Manfred to come as well. And then coming up this afternoon, 4:30, Valks and the Atlanta Dream. You can hear the game on the Valkyries channel on the Odyssey app. You download the app, you search Valkyries, there it is. You can also watch the game on KPIX. Pre-game starts at 4. And we're brought to you by the San Francisco Sheriff's Office. Your future begins here. Afternoon, everybody. It is Willard and Dibbs.
High and deep to left. This one's not coming back. McCutcheon's 10th of the year.
And he got a hanging slider.
I thought in the ninth had one of those feelings where we're going to come back and win the game. I really did. I mean, crowd got into it. You know, we've had that feeling before a bunch here recently. I mean, excuse me, not recently, but for the better part of the season, and just felt like one of those games we were going to come back and win. Obviously didn't finish it off, but better at bats tonight overall with guys in scoring position.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
It's not Bo Mel's fault, but there was something that just kind of made my shoulders get a little uncomfortable when I... That sound clip that Lucas just played, and that comes from NBC Sports Bay Area.
Yep.
Both Kruk and Kipe getting mad again in the middle of the game, followed by Bob Melvin trying to explain life to everybody after the game. It had that feeling like we were going to come back and win. There's nothing wrong with that statement. But on some level, as a frustrated fan, I don't know. Like I'm like, oh, really, Bob? Did you think you were going to win? Did you hope it? And there's nothing Bob can do. Bob's an old dude with a uniform sitting in the dugout. What the hell is he supposed to do? But it's just like, I don't know, Bob. When Yaz and Bailey are at the plate with runners on base, did you feel like they were going to get a hit?
Can I be honest with you?
Because I didn't.
Can I just?
That's just the way I felt.
I'll take you inside of my own world where, you know, when my toddler goes down, we've got shows to watch. So I'll pull out either the phone or the laptop, and I'm going to watch the game because I love it. And I honestly thought watching the game, they were going to come back and win this game.
You did.
I honestly did.
I mean, I get that the arena had the feel.
And the way that inning was going, it was like, okay.
What's his name? Bednar. He was laboring.
Yep.
And the fans were into it and all of that. But it was the classic Giants lineup. It's like at a certain point, you're going to get to that bottom third. And then what the hell's going to happen? You know, and I know Bailey has been very involved in some walk-offs, obviously. But I don't know. Once the Yaz came to the plate, I did not feel like they were going to win the baseball game.
I thought that, you know, you had two cracks at it, you know, you had two ducks in the pond, and Yaz is a guy who's been heroic in the past, including the first game I ever went to with my then-girlfriend, my now-wife, the baby mama, and he hit that splash slam in a game post-COVID in 2021.
Against the D-backs. I remember it.
Maybe I have, like, a special affinity for Yaz in those moments, but I thought, all right, Yaz, and even Bailey, who has now soared up to 209 on the year. He's been at least lukewarm. He no longer needs one of those like marathon blankets.
He had two more hits.
He did.
He had two hits last night.
And so I saw those two at bats and I thought, all you need is just a little flare, you know, a duck snort or had a babe. Whatever they needed. I really actually felt the way that kind of went. Adames, who has been legitimately hot, and he gets it started, and Chappie's been great, and he hit a seed. And he did.
Yep, he did. He hit
and Adames moves over, and Jung-Hoo Lee actually
great
did what we've been begging him to do. Like, stay deep and hit some little flare to left.
Elevate
and it's like,
to left, yes.
Okay. I honestly thought, like, we got action. And then, you know, they lost. But so as you're laying that out, and I'm hearing Bob, I'm thinking, yeah, Bob, forget the standings and forget the last, what, 11 or 12 where – I mean, you haven't beaten anyone. I honestly felt last night like they were going to win that game. And you know me, I'm not known for my positivity.
I know. I felt it like early when you go down 1-0 and then you make it 1-1 and then you go down 4-1 and then you make it 4-4. Like that to me had the vibe of, well, you're the Giants, you're at home, they're the Pirates, they're not. Like that's probably going to go your way. And then, you know, an old vet took a rookie to school, and the next thing you know, now you're playing late game catch up, and that's difficult. But I'll also say this: here's something I don't know anything about. I don't know which players in baseball lean really hard into analytics, and which ones study really hard what's going on. But I say this about Yaz and Bailey. Because how many batters had already been up in the ninth by the time they came up to the plate? Were they like the fifth and sixth or seventh hitters of the inning?
They were the, sixth and seventh.
Okay. So when you're the sixth hitter of an inning and you're watching Bednar, I can tell you what Bednar is going to do on pitch one. I could tell you before he did it.
You think he's going to try to throw a fastball for
a
strike?
He's going to throw a strike. So what would be good? Swing at it, and then you hit it, because that, like, especially a late inning reliever, once you get behind in the count, here's something I don't know if every baseball fan knows, and I don't have the specifics in front of me, but This is overwhelming. And pitchers will tell you this, that the best pitch in baseball is strike one. It's like the numbers of what happens to an at-bat, your chances of getting a hit when you go up 1-0 and 2-0 versus 0-1 and 0-2, your chances, every hitter in the bigs, once it goes to 0-2, is like an under 100 hitter. It's that significant. So if I'm looking to go win a game, and I got a late inning reliever who has not blown a save all year, and he is pumping early in the count strikes, I am going up very aggressively. And both of them walked up there and started watching strikes.
I'm looking at the Yaz play-by-play, and it's first and second. Bednar has been straggling, and the first pitch is a four-seamer, which is a fastball without a ton of movement, 96, and it's located absolutely in that middle square.
Middle of the box.
Alice in the Brady Bunch.
Right.
Shout out those of you who are 60 and over. You get 50, the reference.
I got the reference.
Whatever. 50. And he looked it. He looked at it.
Yep.
Strike looking. And then it's a fastball. Same thing. Four-seamer on the corner. Fouls it off. And now it's 0-2. To your point, he takes the ball. Three foul balls. He's fighting. He's battling. And then he pops out on a curve, and it sets the tone for Bailey, who first pitch, splitter, so a little different,
yep.
And you know he takes it, strike one, curveball fouls it off, splitter ground out, night-night, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
Yeah. So, and listen, I understand also in baseball in the last handful of years, the idea of the walk has really become more popular. Like, they teach that now. You watch Elliot Ramos bat flips his walks.
Nice.
He does. He does. And that's, there's a reason for that with Ramos, which is that for years in the minor leagues, they were really working with Ramos on plate discipline. It's the same thing they've worked with Casey Schmidt on throughout this year. They want, you've got to not swing at stuff outside of the zone. You go outside of the zone, you're going to be a bad hitter in the big leagues. That's true. But I also think sometimes it, and this is challenging, but situationally as a hitter, you've really got to be thinking about that whole, like, am I willing to go out of the zone, or am I going to be uber aggressive here, or do I want to work the count and work the pitcher? When you get to be the sixth hitter in an inning and a run is already in and there's two runners on the play, I don't want you working the count. That's not what you're up there to do. If Yaz gets a walk, what happens? Now the bases are loaded. And you just, and I
for
get
Bailey.
It, for Bailey. Right? And I get it, keep the line moving and all of that, but at a certain point, there are certain moments where I want a hitter to go up there and think about, dude, if you can whack a line drive somewhere, that's the moment to do it. That's the moment to do it. Hit a line drive. And a lot of times, the best time to do that is the first pitch.
It is, and I also think about where Yaz has been. I just went back 23 games, which is about a month. It's a month and change, and he has 12 hits. He's batting 160. His OPS is 481.
It's unbelievably bad.
I mean, the on base is not there. He has a double, a homer, and a run batted in 23 games, which is a month.
Yeah.
And that's going to be about it. 26 punchies in 23 games. So he's in a deep, deep, deep funk. So for him to get up there and expect him to think, you know what? I'm going to just gas up this cut right away because what? You've been hot? He's been so cold that he's probably thinking about, if I can just coax a walk here, I mean, even if it's Bailey behind me, whatever.
Which goes directly to the conversation
exactly.
We had yesterday,
yep.
Which is not okay. You cannot have professional athletes going up there hoping and guessing and praying and handing the baton to someone else to go win the game. Like, you just can't do that. 888-957-9570. Drew in San Jose. Hi, Drew. Thank you for calling. What's up?
Hey, guys. What's going on?
How are you?
Yeah, doing good. I don't know if I'm doing good.
Yeah, man.
I went to the game on Sunday, and that was heart-wrenching in every way, shape, and form. I mean, last night's game, after watching it, just got me thinking, like, what is the main difference between what went on in April and what's going on now, right? Because the players are more or less the same at, like, like adding, obviously you add Devers, I guess, but what happened, right? I felt the team was more engaged in April. I felt that the team was like running the base as well. I felt that I saw more bunting in April. Like I saw more trying new things. I saw more runners getting driven in. It was night and day different than what's going on now. And I don't know. The team doesn't seem mentally engaged. Watching Elliot Ramos with on Sunday running the base paths, like the entire Oracle Park was confused as to what's going on. Yep. Like we were all insane. And even on the fly ball that Lee let drop in front of him, like they're like, why did Lee stop and not survey that properly? It's like, I don't know what's going on, but the team doesn't seem mentally engaged and, you know, into it. And, you know, I obviously don't want to blame this all on Bob Melvin. I'm not that kind of a guy, but making sure the team is mentally engaged and wanting to play and play for the team, that sort of falls on the manager, doesn't it? Well, and when Bob, let me finish. When Bob Melvin has comments about Carson Wisenhunt the day before he gets called up, and when he has a comment during the ESPN broadcast that Spencer been, oh, he doesn't have anything left. I think we're just going to get him out. It sounds like a coach that or doesn't. I don't want to say he doesn't want to be there, but it gives a bad vibe.
He definitely wants to be there. Thank you, Drew, and you're welcome for letting you finish. But here's what I struggle with on this question, because yeah, if you want to come at Bob Melvin about this, a lot of the things that Drew's talking about, yeah, that sure, those are in theory the responsibilities of the manager. But when the manager says, okay, this is how we're going to do it, just like a parent, this is how we're going to do it, and then whoever you're managing doesn't do it effectively, what are your options available? That's what I always look at. Everybody wants Bob to flip a spread. They don't actually flip spreads anymore. We don't do it. I'm sorry. We don't. It's 2025. If you want to flip spreads, you're alive too late. I apologize. Nothing I can do about it. But that's not the way anybody behaves anymore. So what do you want the manager to do? At a certain point, if things are not being done the way somebody in charge wants them to be done, you turn to someone else. My question would be, who would you like him to turn to? And that's going to be my defense for Bob Melvin for now, which is he doesn't have any other options.
Yeah, and that's fair. That's fair. I do look at Wilmer Flores, and I just was wondering in my own head as Drew was laying out his point about what's changed since you got Adames. And, well, Wilmer doesn't play as much as he used to. Before they got Adames, he played in 70 of the first 72, and he was great early, and then he was kind of leveling off, and since then, he plays sporadically, and his OPS, since they got Willie, is 586.
You mean Devers, by the way. You mean Devers.
No, I mean Willie Flores.
No, well, no, you're saying since they got Adames.
I'm sorry, yeah, I know, I appreciate that.
I just want to make sure everybody knew what you were talking about.
The correction was, yeah, it was there, and since mid-June, I was down in Santa Barbara at a graduation, and I was listening to Roxy Bernstein do the national call because I was at a market and Roxy broke the news and I was like, oh my God, I had to pull over and check the show thread and the whole thing. And since then, Wilmer is hitting 220 with one home run. And I'm not saying it's because he's not playing as regularly. Maybe it's because he's getting tired and, you know, he's breaking down, whatever it is. But he, I think, is an example of a guy who was a certain player before and he's a different player after. I don't know if you can necessarily connect it. And honestly, the problem with this Giants team is you have too many guys who should be DHing. And it's Wilmer and Rafi Devers should be a DH. And honestly, Elliot Ramos is probably a DH in waiting. So some of these guys have to play the field. Your defense has been mediocre at best. And I think that Wilmer's kind of suffered from not being in there on the regular.
I think it's a fair point. I'd love to look at what Flores was doing right before Devers got acquired, because it felt like somewhere along the road there he did hit a wall. And let's be honest, whatever he was doing there in the first 2 months of the season, that was not sustainable.
Right.
Like he was leading Major League Baseball in runs driven in at a certain point. He was absolutely off to a torrid start, and that wasn't going to continue. But you know, the larger point that you're making is an interesting one. You know, when you're not an everyday player, it becomes harder to put up numbers and stay in a flow, and they do have this sort of weird triangle going on right now. Because you know who, by the way, I kind of low-key like? Is Dom Smith.
I was waiting for it.
He's a good player.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, he'll hit a little bit for sure. He's got a real good glove over at first base. I'm comfortable when he's in the game, but how do you put him in the game? How do you put him in the game? If you put him in the game, either Devers or Flores doesn't play. And so I don't know if that's your best sort of offensive lineup, but that's one of the pieces that's sort of the cost of doing business when an opportunity like Rafi Devers presents itself. And so I'm sure the Giants looked at that and went, look, it's not perfect, but we're going to deal with that because we're getting Rafi Devers.
Right, and I guess the future of the move will be Bryce Eldridge is the first baseman and Rafi Devers is going to be your DH. And, you know, maybe you get him back to third once every couple of weeks when Chappie needs a break.
Or vice versa.
Sure.
Bryce Eldridge might be the DH, and yeah, Rafi Devers might be your first baseman.
Well, and credit Rafi Devers for a phenomenal play yesterday where he dives and catches the ball and somehow throws the glove up and makes a slap tag. That's something that I did not have on my bingo card.
Oh, it was good.
Because that was two good plays.
Yeah.
It was a save of a bad throw and then a slap tag. Just to close the circle on your question about Flores, in the 26 games before the Devers acquisition, one home run.
Yeah.
And but an OPS of 646, still not good.
Still below
average. Slightly better. Four doubles and, you know, similar kind of numbers, a little bit better, but this is just one of those cases where, you know, Wilmer, it's been a great run, and I'm afraid with Yaz too, like looking at next year, you're not going to have Wilmer or Yaz on this team, I don't believe.
Probably not.
And you're going to have to pivot to, you know, more productive guys in those spots,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Wilmer looks to me, if you just collectively take the last 3 years of Giants baseball with Wilmer Flores, looks to me like a body that can't really do 162 anymore. And I don't mean play them all. I just mean I don't know if he's got 5 months of baseball in him. It breaks down. It breaks down. He can still hit. You know what I mean? He's a great professional hitter and all of those things. But the body wears down, and it's got to affect him. And so he was amazing in April and May and then kind of the start of June. And then he hit a wall. And he's just not really been a productive player after that. And so I don't even know if Wilmer's going to play for anyone next year.
He'll be 34 next week. And, you know, shout out August birthdays. And this is his 13th year. So this is not a criticism.
Not at all.
You get to be 34 and you've played, and this is just tracking his major league. I'm sure he had 3 or 4 years in the minors before that. And so that's a lot of baseball. And you get to be 34 with that level of injury history and
bulky knees. You got bulky knees.
Dude, trust me. I got a knee brace on today. Yeah. I know about bulky knees.
You want to go run around and play every day?
I couldn't make it through one game of adult league softball. I tried to go second to third on a ground ball to the right side, and I made it about halfway.
And then what happened?
The hammy.
Oh.
And the team had a rule where first injury, you buy the beers. And so we get to the we went to the fourth bore in Orinda for the post game. Cost me about $80.
Oh, damn.
For a round of beers. You had 12 guys,
did
right?
Did you also get tagged out, or did you crawl to third?
I was able to make it to third.
Oh, good.
And then we went to the...
I'm proud of you.
I mean...
Nice job.
Second baseman might have booted it.
Oh,
so
you know.
There was no play to be made at third.
Yeah.
But I get it, bulky knees. Shout out Trent.
No
so,
doubt. No doubt.
It's been a great run. And the rest of this year, to your point, like, what options do you have?
Well,
your backup catcher hits less than your starting catcher.
Good Lord.
And your outfield is not very good at fielding the ball. Wisely is a worse hitter than Schmidt, who's been subpar. I mean, he's had moments, right? Including a home run off a position player. And I'll get to that maybe later in the show about that as a pet peeve. Maybe I'll save it for Friday.
Oh, that'd be a good one. Yeah, I know you. I mean, it's like so in vogue now that if you even see a baseball game just on the scoreboard and somebody's up by 10 runs, you're like, well, that's the end of that pitching staff. You know that some outfielder, fifth outfielder is in there pitching at that point.
And I'll just do it now because it's not a big deal for Friday, but The kid on the A's who had the four home runs in a game.
Yeah, one of them was off of a position play.
Thank you. So, I mean, what are we even doing here?
I don't know. Like, it counts.
It counts, yes. But Casey Schmidt hit a couple of big balls, a grand slam.
Couple grannies.
Right. Off of, Kike Hernandez?
Yeah, but one of them was off of Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
It counts.
Yeah.
But my point is, to your point about, what are you going to do about it, Bob Bomell? You don't have options. You don't have guys behind the guy who can actually do anything.
We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. The larger issue that to me that is in play with talking about the Giants and their payroll and the fact that they're still not able to separate in the standings kind of blends with what happened, and many of you may have heard about it, between Bryce Harper and Rob Manfred in the Phillies clubhouse last week. It came to light yesterday. We'll explain what we're talking about there and continue with your calls. Mac in San Francisco, you'll be first up. 888-957-9570. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. This is Willard and Dibbs.